This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Yo, third hour. What's happening? Tiki and Tierney coming from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans Studios, who found a better way to mortgage so you can focus on making your new house home. Rocket Mortgage, push button, get mortgage. Thursday around the country, Tiki and Tierney. CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network, Sirius XM, Channel 206, on Twitter at Tiki and Tierney, 1-855-212-4227, 855-212-4CBS. If you want to jump back in on the Brady stuff, which we're going to get back into now, Chris Broussard coming up in about 18 minutes from Fox NBA analyst, and get his thoughts on post-All-Star game stuff, the Rockets, and how viable that remains moving forward. Some trends in the NBA, LeBron, whether or not that's something we have to really worry about. Let me ask you about Brady, all right? Let me frame it a little differently in a form of a question.
Mm-hmm.
Do you believe at this point for him, it is more about winning or more about getting paid?
That's a good question. He's made so much money because he played 20 years. Now think about this. If you play 20 years and you're making $15 million, you're making, on average, you're still up around, you know, close to $300 million over mm-hmm. the course of your career. Find out, Sam, to how much he made in his whole career. So it's, I think it's more about respect,
mm-hmm.
and that means money.
Mm-hmm.
So, because, you know, if he leaves New England, the expectation that he's going to win a Super Bowl with whatever talent is there, unless it's like the Kansas City Chiefs, which is clearly not going to be,
mm-hmm.
how can he expect to win? So it's got to be about money / respect, if you're asking me.
Okay. By the way, it's $235 million is what he's banked so far. If respect correlates to money, then I agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
Believe there's a real connection there. Then I believe that really increases the odds of him bouncing, because I just don't think the Pats going to change their model for him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't.
But if there's one guy
mm-hmm.
in the modern history, because I mean, I don't know what the old history is in the past, and they weren't very good, so it's not even worth talking about. But the modern history of the Patriots, if there's one guy you're going to amend that for, shouldn't it be this guy?
Yes, but this is where the uniqueness of the Patriots separates them from their peers. They don't get wrapped up in the
Sentimentality
of it. They don't romanticize what's behind them.
Yeah.
They look in front of them.
Regardless of who the player is.
Yeah.
No matter how good you were, no matter how important you were, no matter how selfless you were, yeah. when it's time to move on from you, we're moving on from you.
And we always knew this was going to be the ultimate test here. We knew this was coming. We didn't know when.
Yeah.
We didn't think it would quite be 43 years of age.
I actually thought it would be like 39.
38. Or, yeah.
yeah. Something like that.
Oh, that was certainly reasonable. That's when, you know, some of the other greats have kind of fizzled out. That's mm-hmm. that's a fair age, you
Instead,
know.
Instead, he won two more Super Bowls and went to a third and won an MVP.
I know he did.
It's like,
boy, the TB12 method is good. All right, so if it's about getting paid more so than winning, which yeah. I agree with,
mm-hmm.
I can now make the case that I believe he can do both in other places. Much more so than the Pats. He can get paid more than the Pats will pay him.
But they still have a really good defense. So let's not forget this. And that props them up. I hear what you're saying. But they had a really good defense. So
do they?
Well, they did. And maybe it was opportunistic because of the schedule, especially the schedule early.
For 7-8 games.
That was pitiful.
The Bills, they scored. They blocked the punt that game.
If I'm remembering this correctly.
The Dolphins.
They didn't give up an offensive touchdown for like 8 weeks, right? It was something. It was something ridiculous.
Roughly half.
Maybe there was one, but it was ridiculous.
No, it was a while. You're right.
How good their defense was playing. Mm-hmm. They did also have the defensive player of the year, Stephon Gilmore. Like, they have good players on that side of the ball. So my guess is that they are going to continue playing well defensively. And for an older quarterback, as we saw with Peyton Manning, that's often like one of the big factors in whether or not you're going to win or not, mm-hmm. is how well your defense is. So if you do make mistakes or you are limited, you're not giving up, you know, dozens of points a weekend. So, yeah, so I hear what you're saying, but recent history says the Patriots are always going to be good defensively because obviously it's Bill Belichick's calling card.
Yep.
And as long as you're not mistake-riddled on offense, you're still going to be good, regardless of who the quarterback is.
Mm-hmm. I remember they played the Jets in Week 2. They played the Dolphins in Week 2. That's what AB caught the touchdown.
Yep.
The three targets on the first series. They shut them out, 43-zip. Then they played the Jets, and they beat the Jets 30-14. And then they played the Bills. That's when they gave up their first touchdown. It was Week 4.
Yep.
The Pats blocked the punt. They won 16-10 that game up in Buffalo. Then they played Dwayne Haskins and the Redskins. Did Haskins start that game?
No, he did, I think he came in at some point.
I don't think he started Week 5. That was still, I believe, a little bit before he got the call. But still, at Washington, the Redskins were a disaster.
Yeah.
Then they played the Giants, especially early. When they changed coaches, they ran the ball, they were a little bit better. The Redskins, but early on, they were a mess. Then they played Daniel Jones. That was the Thursday night game. Mm-hmm. Saquon didn't play. A couple of receivers, Sterling Shepard didn't play.
Yep.
And it was a one-possession game in the fourth quarter,
right,
if you recall. Then they played the Jets without Sam Darnold, shut them out 33-zip. Then they played the Browns, who were all sorts of backwards at that point. Then really their first true test, they play the Ravens, and they give up 37.
That's right.
And they get crushed.
Yeah, at that point they had given up 4 touchdowns in the first 8 weeks, and then they got blown out of the building.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was the first kind of eye-opening event. But, you know, just to move it forward, if Tom Brady should leave, where would he land? Where would he most interestingly
Raiders
land?
Raiders or the Titans.
The Raiders are the
Titans. I'm not buying the Colts. I'm not buying the Colts at all.
Well, because all they're talking about, the Colts are the one team that are not like throwing their existing quarterback under the bus. You know what I mean? Everybody else is kind of like, yeah, everything's open. Yeah, we're going to evaluate it as it comes. The Colts are like, yeah, we like Jacoby Brissett.
Mm-hmm.
That's who we're going to go with. Now, they could just be blowing smoke, but who knows? The other team that keeps popping and doesn't have a signed quarterback right now is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And Bruce Arians, we alluded to this earlier, is skirted with the tampering rules. I don't know why they let it slide, because Tom Brady is technically under contract and for another 2.5 weeks.
Yeah.
And when asked about who he would be interested in if they don't sign Jameis Winston, which he's a free agent as well in a couple of weeks, he said, well, if Tom Brady calls, then I would be interested. Which is clearly tampering, but he's not getting in trouble for it. Tampa is interesting to me for Brady, not because I think he's automatically going to elevate that team to like Super Bowl contention, but the weapons there offensively got to be really enticing for him.
Yeah,
it's been a long time, probably the Randy Moss year in 2007, right, 2008, since they had a top flight, and Randy was like the menace at that point, had like the top of the league, I mean by top of the league, 5 or 6 or even maybe hit the 10 level wide receiver. They haven't had one in a long time, and we all remember what Brady did that season. He threw for 50 touchdown passes and had one of the best offenses in football. So if Brady wants to spend his twilight with some superstars, Tampa's a place to go to, and it's really the only one that has superstar wide receivers that's available to him right now.
Yeah, Tampa's interesting. I don't see that happening.
I don't either, but Bruce Arians is talking about it.
Put it this way. If the Raiders had Tampa's weaponry,
that
would be pushed even more.
Agreed.
Here's the thing, though. What is Bruce Arians all about? Throwing it down the field.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Brady's not about throwing it down the field at this
point.
Well,
he's not.
Around that?
But
who's going to change?
It's timing. And I think if Tom Brady can adjust his timing, then maybe it works. But this is why I ultimately see him fitting back in New England. Because, like, every place that I want to stick him, whether it's Tampa, Bruce Arians is, dude, give me 60% completion percentage. I don't care. We hit five of those, and we put up 430 yards, and as long as you don't turn the football over, Jameis Winston, then we're going to win. That's his philosophy. That doesn't fit Tom's, like, skill set right now in his career. The same thing can be said about Oakland. I mean, it's a two tight end wide receiver.
Vegas. We got to give them respect.
They're not there yet. The Vegas Raiders. They're more about running the ball, which may fit better. But who's his go to wide receiver in Vegas? True. Same thing can be said about Tennessee.
And they have two first round picks, right?
Yeah.
Draft one.
Yeah, and there's a couple that are available coming out of this draft. And in Tennessee makes sense, but for me, Tennessee, they'd be stupid not to stick with Marcus Mariota. I mean, Ryan Tannehill, simply because it feels organic and it's significantly cheaper than bringing in Tom Brady.
We don't know that it's going to be cheaper, though. We don't know that. I mean, I don't think that you're going to be proven wrong with that statement.
I can't see Ryan Tannehill. Yeah, I do, but I can't see Ryan Tannehill all of a sudden driving his market to $30+ million. I just don't see it. Mm-hmm. He only started for like 8-9 games or something like that. Whatever, I think it was 9 games last season.
They were 2-5 when he came in.
Yeah, so he was great. Obviously, completion percentage wise and success rate and TD to interception ratio, all those great things that you look for. But I still don't think he's breaking the bank. He's going to get paid. I don't see him breaking the bank like Tom Brady wants to get paid right now, which is $30 million a year.
Just came across this. Ian Rappaport of NFL Media named the Chargers, the Raiders, and the Colts as teams Don Yee and Carter Chow have already met with about Brady this week in Indianapolis.
But again,
even though you're not supposed to.
Yeah, but what does that even mean? We had a beverage. We talked about it over lunch.
Beverage leads to a lot of things.
You might have a
drink. Drink leads to a lot.
That's a good point.
The Giants named by a different...
Two drinks and leads to more.
Three leads to trouble. The Giants named by a different NFL media reporter as a potential suitor. Mm. We touched that before, which makes... I didn't make it. If the Giants were like really, truly ready to win...
That makes no sense.
Maybe, but no. We're not listed in Rappaport's report. So according to Rappaport, it's those three teams. I'm not buying the Colts. I am buying the Raiders. I'm not even really buying the Chargers. To me, I think it comes down to the Pats, obviously, the Raiders, and the Tennessee Titans. Anything outside of that would borderline stun me. I won't be stunned if he leaves the Pats, but if he went to the Colts, I would be stunned.
Yep.
If he went to the Chargers, I would be not quite stunned, but I would be very surprised.
Yeah, I'm going to stick what I've been saying all offseason. I think the only place it makes sense is the New England Patriots. Okay. And I think ultimately Robert Kraft... and Bill Belichick, with his arm twisted behind his back, will end up paying him $28 million, and he'll be content.
Now, the speculation's the fun part. We'll get the answers eventually. We're going to ride it as long as we can. All right, coming up, we'll switch it up, get to the NBA. LeBron, groin strain, or is it really just code for, and which we have no problem with, by the way, he's barely sat out a game this year, maybe just looking for a little maintenance day. Is there something behind this? So we'll talk to Chris Broussard, Fox Sports NBA analyst, get the scoop on LeBron's health and what they plan on doing the rest of the season. Little Rockets as well. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line is 1-855-212-4227, sponsored by GEICO. Whether you own or rent, GEICO makes it easy to bundle home and auto insurance. Having a home is hard work. Get a quote, GEICO.com. All right, Tiki and Tierney here, CBS Sports Radio. Mix it up and... get back to hoops. LeBron's going to get a maintenance day. I mean, rest up that groin a little bit tonight as the Lakers and the Clippers and the Nuggets all racing for the top. And the Rockets make a little move here for sure. They've looked very good as Tiki has ridden the Rockets now for, I'd say, a good 10 days.
Right. And
he's really, really intrigued by the story. Let's talk about that. Some other NBA issues. Chris Broussard from FS1. He's an NBA analyst, and he's been with us before. Chris, welcome back, buddy. Tiki and Tierney, how you doing today?
I'm great, guys. How you doing?
Doing all right,
buddy.
We
are fantastic. You know, BT teased the Lakers and the Rockets, but let me start with the Clippers. Like, there's so much that's exciting about them, but they're not playing together. And in some regards, it could be looked at as a positive, right, because there's no film on them, so to speak. But at what point do we worry about continuity and Paul George's injury history? Like, where are we at with the Clippers right now?
Yeah, that's a great question, because at some point you do have to get them all playing together at the same time.
Yeah.
And if Paul George is healthy, Kawhi sitting out every fourth game. If Kawhi's there, Patrick Beverley's injured. It's just ridiculous. Now, I will say this. If Paul George were to somehow be injured in the playoffs, I still think the Clippers, as long as they had everybody else, would be a contender. I still would give them a good shot. You probably favor the Lakers over them if George isn't there. But I think they'd be that good. I think the one guy, if they lose Kawhi, obviously they don't have a shot.
Yeah.
Lou Williams and Pat Beverly are also, I might even, as much as I like Paul George, he's a better player than those guys, those two. I think they may be a little more important to the culture and what they bring to that team. But to get to your question, look, on the one hand, you could say it's a positive because their record is still very strong.
Yep.
Without being healthy, and they beat the Lakers without Paul George once. And when they're healthy, they're 5-0 and play really good basketball. I'm not overly concerned about it, but yes, at some point late in the season, maybe the last month, if you're a Clippers fan, you got to hope that those guys will be on the court together consistently, so you do have some chemistry going into the playoffs, because it's only a small gap between these top teams, and a little thing like not having great chemistry because you just haven't been on the court together could be the difference.
Yeah, you know, and it's funny because they started the season playing against the Los Angeles Lakers, and BT and I talked about this, and BT was like, oh, the Clippers just snatched, like,
they punked out. I mean, Chris, you know, he punked out. Punked out against Kawhi.
They snatched it away that game one. But since then, like, this lack of consistency on the Clippers side is a stark contrast to this extraordinary consistency on the Lakers side. And so, like, they're coming to a head. This is going to be something significant. But is that important? Is it important that the Lakers have done this? And I think it was intentional, like LeBron playing heavy minutes and like really fighting to win every single one of these games that they secure the number one seed. Why? It doesn't matter because they're in the same building. But you know what I mean? It feels like this is important to the Lakers, but maybe not so much so for the Clippers.
Well, yeah, the Clippers certainly. And that's what you guys are probably seeing reports where there was maybe some chemistry issues within the Clippers team and organization. And really what that boils down to is a complete shift in culture. Whereas last year when you had a bunch of role players, every possession counted. I mean, those guys fought not just every game, but every single possession. Now you bring in two stars, and one of them's always hurting, Paul George. The other one is like, none of this matters. Get me to May and June, and we'll work it out. And so that difference in culture has been a little bit of a problem with the Clippers and ruffled some feathers. Not to the point where I think it's going to be too damaging, but certainly that's an issue right there at this point. For the Lakers, I like, obviously, that they're respecting the regular season. I liked it, Anthony Davis, and I think this is largely a credit to LeBron James. He's got AD playing through these injuries. You guys know this. You've watched AD over the years. If he were still in New Orleans, he would have probably missed 20 games by now. Because he's literally, he would have sat out.
Yeah.
You know? And
LeBron won't let him, right? LeBron won't let him do that.
LeBron's toughening him up. Now, here's one thing I will say that I don't like about what the Lakers are doing. If I feel like the AD is the key to the series with the Clippers, assuming those two meet in the conference final. Because while LeBron is going to play great, he's LeBron, Kawhi and Paul George can kind of answer what he will give the Lakers. They don't have an answer for Anthony Davis. Nobody can stop him inside, and if you put a big man on him, he can take him outside. But his fourth quarter numbers are astounding. He's only playing like 6 minutes a game in the fourth quarter. He's averaging about 4 points in the fourth quarter and about 3 or 4 shots. So if I believe the Lakers need to start playing him more in the fourth, if you have to give him a break in the third, fine. They typically play him the whole third quarter. Give him a break in the third, play him most of the fourth, and get him used to taking shots, because the shots aren't always going to be there for LeBron, because he's going to have Kawhi or Paul George defending him. AD has got to begin to develop the mentality of being a go-to guy down the stretch. He hasn't really been that throughout his career, and he hasn't been that this season. So I believe that Lakers are making a mistake by not focusing more on AD in the fourth, even to the point where if you got to force feed him and maybe it costs you a game or two. I don't care. I want his mentality to be, I am taking over in the fourth, and nobody can stop me, and I haven't seen that yet.
Okay, so we're talking to Chris Broussard, FS1 NBA analyst. Chris, I want to jump over to Philly here. I got to run something by here. I said this today. So Ben Simmons at LSU was one season in college, 32 games. He took three threes. He made one, okay? As we all know, he's out for his rookie year, hurt his foot, didn't play, comes back, wins rookie of the year. We're just about three-quarters of the way through his third actual playing year, but fourth as a pro. So he's played almost three full seasons in the NBA, and he has made two threes. So he entered the league incredibly deficient. And listen, I say this, everybody regurgitates the notion that he doesn't shoot. I understand. Everybody knows that. What I want to throw at you is I want to directly put the blame on the doorstep of the Sixers organization because they knew what they drafted, couldn't shoot, didn't want to, and they have the same guy almost four calendar years later. To me, that's on the Sixers as much as it's on Simmons.
Well, look, I think you can put some blame on the Sixers, but I think the lion's share is on Simmons. If a guy doesn't want to work on that aspect of his game and he's that level of superstar and you paid him that much money, he's your number one pick, what can you do? I mean, you look, because he's represented by Rich Paul. He's in, you know, LeBron is right there in his ear as well. And they want him to work too, but he's not doing it. Now, it looked like last summer that he worked on his jump shot. You know, he posted all those videos and this and that. But then he doesn't shoot him in the game. There's some type of mental block there.
Yeah, that's what BT said.
There's no question about it. And I get what you're saying because, you know, we're old school where the coach makes you do something you need to work on. And if you don't do it, he benches you. But, you know, he can't really do that in today's NBA. It is very disappointing because we've seen guys. I mean, Giannis, for goodness sake, he's not a great shooter at the three-point line, but he's decent, and his stroke is not as bad as Ben's is. His stroke is smoother than Giannis's, and Giannis has worked on it and improved. Zion has shown a little bit of improvement from college. You can clearly work on your shot. Jason Kidd showed us that, but that's why it's clear there is some type of mental block there, which is disturbing, and that's something you have to look at going forward with Ben Simmons, too.
Hmm. Are you worried about his back, by the way? Is that a big problem or you don't know yet?
Yeah, I mean, you don't know yet, you know, but it could be a disc issue, which can, you know, heal. A lot of times that heals on its own. Anytime it's the back, you get scared. I would tend to think it's not anything too serious at this point, but it makes you – what it does is, obviously, if he's out for a significant amount of time, it obviously hurts you for this year. But I also think it hurts you going forward because if they go out early in the playoffs, now, if they go out early in the playoffs, I'm doing one of two things. I'm firing Brett Brown and bringing in a coach that I feel very confident can maximize Embiid and Simmons together. And if the coach can't do it, I know they just can't play together. Or the second option is I'm trading Embiid. I think if Simmons misses significant time, now I don't think you could trade one of them. I think you want to see them together a lot longer because before you trade them, because obviously you're giving up a lot if you break these guys up. So I think now your only option if they have a disappointing postseason will be to bring in a new coach, which might be fine, but they got to – like, I just think it sets back the process of do we move on from one of these two guys or do we, you know, before – because can we win with them?
Yeah.
I don't think you're going to have to see them enough together.
Yeah.
And also Simmons might become – his market value might lessen if the back injury is serious.
Yeah, no, you're right. But again, he's already been paid 5 years, $170 million. The back end of that deal in 2025 ends at $38 million a year for Ben Simmons. So he best not need a bacchiotomy, so to like to speak. Houston Rockets.
We've seen great players that were young, you know, whether it was Derrick Rose, Penny Hardaway,
yeah.
Grant Hill.
Great point.
We've seen, like, superstars in the making get injured and never, you know.
Larry Johnson.
Larry, right.
Yep.
So it's not out of the realm of possibility.
Yeah, you're right. All right, the Houston Rockets, I've started to become infatuated with them because I feel like this be small, be wide-ass open, nobody even close to the lane has opened up and really unlocked Russell Westbrook, who had a great game last night, albeit against Memphis Grizzlies, who are on a serious slide right now. But are you buying this as much as I'm buying them right now? I know it's still some challenges they're going to face, especially against some of these bigger teams in the postseason, but if they get seeded correctly, I mean, they might find themselves right in the Western Conference Finals against teams that they can beat.
Well, I'm buying them as the third best team in the West now. You know, I'm not buying them as a championship team. I mean, I'm not buying them as being better than the Lakers or the Clippers. Could they do I say they have absolutely zero chance of upsetting one of those L.A. teams? I wouldn't go that far, but I think the chances would be minuscule that they could beat the Lakers or the Clippers. But look, I think they were better suited to win a championship with Chris Paul and Clint Capella. Let's not remember they were just, I mean, they had the Warriors down 3-2.
That's right.
And Chris Paul gets hurt. So I think that was a better team. But once you made the deal and got Westbrook and let Chris go, I think this was the best move they could make because, as you said, they opened up the lane for Westbrook really for the first time in his career. And now he can just drive to the lane. He doesn't have to shoot threes, which he was horrible at.
Yep.
And Harden can still do his thing. So they are much more of a 1-2 punch, much more of a both Russ and Harden's team now than they were a month ago. A month ago, it was Harden's team clearly, and Russ kind of just got in where he fit in like the rest of the guys, whereas now – both of them are able to maximize their ability. So they are better. I just don't buy them beating one of the L.A. teams, though.
You tell him, Chris. He's getting a little.
I'm not even saying that they're a favorite. I'm just saying they're fun as hell to watch.
Yeah, that's what he's just not sure.
They're a hoot. They're a hoot. I'll give you that.
A hoot? That's what my father-in-law says. But you're from Indiana. That's a Texas word. A hoot. Chris, good work, brother. Thank you very much.
All right, guys, anytime.
Thank you, man. Chris Broussard, FS1 NBA analyst. They're a hoot.
I haven't heard that in a long time.
That's an old school expression. Speaking of old school, here's Ack. We'll get the update from him coming up after that. 5 games in. How many times do you think the Astros have been plunked? The blast is next. We'll tell you after Ack. Go get him, Mac. All right, Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network here. A lot of stuff on Tom Brady, and that's not going anywhere until it actually does here. Combine is churning out the good stories. Yeah, you got to be smart enough to know what's real, what's not. And really, the Brady stuff might not be real, but it is real until he re-signs with the Pats. That's what makes it compelling.
You're right.
You know, you're going to want to probably get back and check out some of our show. Teak and I hit it all today, radio.com, Apple, iTunes. Good way to get it. Right now, though, we get to the blast. Diesel, hit it up, bud.
So many topics, so little time. We give you 5 stories in 5 minutes, but don't take too long or you'll suffer the buzzer. It's time for The Blast with Tiki and Tierney.
All right, so the Chiefs used the franchise tag on Chris Jones. What are our thoughts on this?
Well, look, he had 15 and a half sacks 2 years ago, 9 sacks last year, helped them win a Super Bowl championship. If we've forgotten, he was the one that kept stopping and jumping and knocking down passes, you know, in the Super Bowl. So he's a really good player. His reaction was, man, what else do I got to prove? I guess, look, we don't know what the tag number is yet. And without the tag number, the number is so skewed because of Aaron Donald, who got that ridiculous deal a couple years ago as the top D tackle. But he's really like the top defensive lineman. So it's it's a skewed number, so it's really hard to know what the value of a really good but not best defensive player in the league number is. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of the only choice they had because the value is hard to figure out right now.
Yeah, I believe the value's somewhere in the neighborhood, Mike was saying, right around 16 to 18, somewhere in that vicinity, which makes sense. Yeah, I mean, you tag them. You could always go back and sit down and try to hammer something out.
Mm-hmm.
But it freezes it. It certainly doesn't – it freezes him from doing anything, and it doesn't appease him necessarily based on his reaction on social media. But I get it. I don't love it. I understand why players don't love it. But it is what it is until it's either – tweaked or taken away, it's an asset and teams are going to use it, period. Mm-hmm. All right, this is troubling to me. The Knicks' R.J. Barrett, all right, says he's a righty with better form shooting righty. But as we all know, he's a lefty, or at least he shoots lefty here. Should the Knicks try to get him to shoot with his dominant hand? Oh, God.
Only the Knicks.
Only the Knicks.
I'm telling you, man.
Third overall pick, you don't even know what hand you want to shoot with. Only the Knicks could do this. Now, I got to be honest with you. Yeah, first of all, it's alarming just by itself, but this is something I might actually entertain because he is so wildly inefficient from the free throw line. I mean, he's horrendous. What 38, is he, 40%?
38, BT. 40? Look at it.
Where, I mean, no,
from
that's,
the field. Oh, from the
field. No, I'm talking about from free throw line.
Yeah, 40.
It's very low. It might be a little higher now, but it's low. It's definitely below 60%, which for somebody with a guard skill is just completely unacceptable. So fundamentally, the three-point shot is one thing. Guys closing on you, it's a little further away than it is in college. I understand that. Mm. But if you're horrendous at the free-throw line with one hand, you know what? This summer, you might want to mess around and shoot righty. I might actually entertain it on the Knicks.
I look at these stats, BT, and again, he's a rookie. He's adjusting to a different game. Played a year at Duke where he wasn't really the guy because of Zion. But 30% from free-throw, from three-point land and 60% at your right from the free throw line, under 40 from the field. It's like troubling.
Very bad numbers.
How bad this looks. Now, some of that might be because, some of these young kids are just not used to being on bad teams. You know what I mean?
Doesn't have a point guard either to get him easy shots, which gets the numbers up.
But think about what he grew up with. High school, small ball, then he gets to high school, AAU, Duke. Like, he's on a great team.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, you get this massive dose of adversity because you're on the Knicks and you just like you go down instead of lifting, you kind of come to the average of everybody else.
Yep.
I hope that that's the case and he can correct this, but those are troubling numbers.
I really like him, and he'll never be the best player on any team. It's not any good team. I firmly believe that. Still believe in his upside, defense, passing, aptitude. He's got to tweak that shot though, because if you play with those numbers, you're very limited. That's a problem. That's 60% for the free throw for a guard forward. Come on. Top online ticket brokers support law to require disclosure of extra fees up front rather than at checkout.
Mm.
Should this be a law?
Yeah, this should definitely be a law because you're starting to see a lot of non-transactions happening because people want tickets. And this is for sporting events, but it's also for concerts and everything else where you oh, man, this is a deal, right? And we're close to the event. These tickets are available. Let me go get them. And by the time you get them, it's probably more than the face value of the ticket. And you end up not being able to consummate the deal. It's lost revenue. This is why it's becoming a political thing as well, as representatives out in Colorado particularly are pushing this to become law so that people can make these transactions and businesses can earn money and therefore taxing of those tickets can happen. So, yeah, absolutely. Transparency is key for any type of transaction, especially with these secondary market type deals with tickets.
Let me ask you a question. Now, nobody asks this question anymore because we all have phones. And if you don't wear a watch, which you and I always do every day, we just look at our phone. But if somebody asked you, hey, what time is it?
Yeah.
Would you say, well, it's 5:48 plus 13%?
No.
No.
Yeah.
You're not going to make them figure it out. You can tell them what time it is.
That's right.
So I'm totally with you. This is such a basic thing. The trickery is repulsive. I'm willing to pay what I'm buying.
Mm-hmm.
But I need to know exactly what I'm getting and how much I'm paying.
Yeah.
Don't trick me. Let me know, and I'll make the determination if I can afford it.
Yeah.
This is easy stuff. All right, 7 Astro players have been hit. 7! Told you. I told you. 5 games so far. Just spring training control issues or clearly intentional? Well, maybe a little bit of both. I do believe there's been a few messages sent. Not the one to Altuve that happened about 2 days ago. But you have to understand, you know, and I flipped on MLB Network a few times. Yes, for the Yankees, SNY, for the Mets already. I don't stick with it very long, but a little bit. And I feel like every time I flipped on the channels and I've caught a game mid-game, I've seen a high number on the mound. Which means the kid is very young, who probably throws gas, who has no control of the strike zone, doesn't have control of his secondary stuff, and when you're trying to impress a staff, you need to show that you have more than a fastball because everybody can hit that in the show. So when you deviate from what you're not really good at yet, and young kids are not control pitchers primarily, you're going to hit some play. It's going to get away from you. So I think it's a little bit of both. A few slipped and a few are on purpose.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But in your mind, some of these pitchers are also probably, even if they are young and, you know, double-A prospects or whatever they may be, they still have the same emotion that a lot of major leaguers have about the Houston Astros. So if it's going to get away from them, they're okay with it. I'm losing my control a little bit. I'm still going to rear back and throw it as hard as I can.
All right, Teague, last one here on the blast. Maryland's head coach Mark Turgeon upset with the late tip-off time.
My goal is to be in my driveway before 4:30. We played a 9 o'clock Eastern game in Minnesota on a weeknight. Makes no sense.
Okay. Does Coach have a little something to stand on there? Should the NCAA create a rule for how late games can start on school nights?
I mean, in some ways, yeah. Right? Because a lot of these kids, they got to go to class the next day.
That's right.
Right? It doesn't just stop because you have a basketball game. A 9 p.m. tip-off, that's 9 Eastern, right? Which makes it so it's 8 Minnesota time? 3-hour game?
I believe Minnesota's a 1-hour difference.
Yeah,
I think it's 1.
So, I mean, these games end at 11:30 or something. The kids take a shower, do the media thing. They get home at 1:30, 2 o'clock.
Yeah, it's tough.
It's real tough. I mean, who knows if they had school working up, but still, it's challenging, to say the least. Should there be a rule? I don't think you can make a blanket rule, but I think that this falls on the conference more so than the NCAA, needs to make this a priority because it kind of gets unfair for some of these student athletes.
Well, the problem is it's the networks who really determine this, so the schools are kind of powerless. I mean, unless they step up to the plate and initiate some sort of, you know, real resistance, some reform here, as Coach is trying to obviously push for. They're prisoners to, you know, what the networks perceive to be the money games.
Yeah.
And listen, whether it's, you know, the FS1 with the Big East, and there's a doubleheader on last night. St. John's played earlier. There was a game after it. Or the Big Ten Network where they go back-to-back. Or all the ESPN rolling in the ACC. Mm-hmm. Whatever it might be, you're going to layer it so that you have, you know, an average game early and then a game that you perceive to be more appealing later for the, you know, to maximize ratings. So until they take that leverage away from the networks. But they probably won't because the networks are paying them. So that's why Mark Turgeon gets in at 4 in the morning because the Big Ten's getting a lot of money.
And he's getting a lot of money.
Yes.
Time's up. The blast is over for another day.
So essentially, don't cry too much.
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you, I don't know that the average fan would like to see this. Now, we know that I don't know that you could do this with big, high-profile conferences. But matter of fact, you can. Well, maybe you can meet somewhere in between. The Ivy plays Friday and Sunday.
Yeah.
My school's conference, which is a small one, MAC, but a good academic profile, they play Friday and Sunday, and there's only a handful of, like, one weeknight games. Each school, they're allotted a few. You're not going to really do that with the ACC, the Big Ten, the SEC. Yeah. I understand that, the Big East. But maybe there's a limit on, you know, how many games a team can play during the week, away from home.
Yeah.
You know, maybe there's some boundaries you can kind of cross out there.
Yeah. No, I think it has to be that way because otherwise, like, the best teams are going to be, like, Duke. They could theoretically be on every weekday, a weekday night every week. Right?
Correct.
And that just gets hard. I mean, we want these kids to be students as well, even though that's kind of pipe dreamers, but whatever.
No, I mean,
it depends on the school, really.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if you're 1,000 miles away or 800, 200, 300, whatever miles away, an away game, even like Virginia. They were at Virginia Tech last night. That's a hike getting home.
Is it really?
Yeah. I mean, it's
Blacksburg to Charlottesville?
It's at least, we'll see.
Would they bust that or fly it?
probably bus it.
Yeah.
It's because it's only like, it's not long enough to fly.
Yeah.
But it's short enough to drive, but it's still a hellacious drive for a game that ends at 9 o'clock at night or whatever the heck it is.
Apartment, shower, get on the bus. You got to have a little food.
I think it's about 3 hours, 3.5 hours.
Because
it was 2 hours to Roanoke to get home for me. And then we were probably 45 minutes, maybe an hour from Blacksburg, from Roanoke. I'd say it's probably like 3 hours, 3.5 hours.
Well, the thing that changed it too, back in the day when Duke was playing, and they're still playing these schools, they're all in a 20-mile radius.
Oh, yeah.
But now there's Boston College here, Syracuse up here, mm-hmm. this school over here.
Florida State
down there. Teague, have a great night. We will see you tomorrow. Who knows, maybe something on Brady. Peace. Gotta go.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.